I don't feel like I'm just going to push everything down and just be my normal self to everyone. Nobody's going to know that I'm not doing okay. I thought that was the best way to get better.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Welcome, one and all. This is the Still Parents podcast. My name is Dan. I'm here, as always, from the Lily May Foundation with Ryan and with Matt. How are you, gents?
Very well, thank you.
Matt, how are you?
I'm very well, mate.
So let's introduce our guest. His name is Rob Saunders. Hello, Rob. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me on the show.
And Rob is joining us all the way from Australia. Whereabouts are you, Rob?
So I'm in Melbourne, in the state of Victoria, which is where a few of the other guests are from.
Thank you for joining us, because I know, as is always the case when we get an Australian guest on, it's pretty early, Monday morning where you are. It's like 6 a.m. or something like that.
Yeah, so, it's commitment.
Well, that's a great word to use, actually, because commitment is something which is very prominent in Rob's life, especially over last year, because there was a particular challenge that we're going to get into that it was phenomenal.
I think challenge is an understatement.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. But we'll get into that to find a little bit more about Rob. Obviously, the reason why you're joining us on this podcast, we're happy to have you on, but obviously it's horrible the reason that you're coming on in the first place is you have lost your baby. It was Billy who you lost 35 weeks, stillborn, was it in 2019? Yeah. Do you have any other children, you and your partner?
Yes, so we've got two rainbow babies. So we've got a three-year-old, his name's Logan, and then we've got an eight-month-old named Addison.
Is Logan forgive my ignorance here, is that like an Australian name? Because I'm thinking of the guy from...
Addison, I thought, was Addison an Australian? I say an Australian name. Is that name quite prominent in Australia?
No, not really. It's a name that my wife liked more than anything else, so that's the one we went with.
Your wife, are you? How did you guys meet? How long have you been together?
So we've been together, it was 2025 now.
This
so
question always catches out the blokes.
12 years, 12, 13 years.
Yeah.
I think we've been together, we've been married for 7.
Yeah.
7 with confidence. When's your anniversary, Rob?
Why have you done that for? Look at you.
The 6th of May. The only reason I know that is because it's 2 days after May the 4th, which is
good way of remembering.
Love it.
Yeah.
I love the fact that essentially Rob has just said the only reason I remember what date I married my wife is because of Star Wars.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
She knew that going in.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us your other half's name, or is that something you want to keep private? Or sorry, I'm being very nosy here, but I always like finding out as much as we can.
That's all good. Her name's Dale, so it's very easy for me to go pick up takeaway when she orders things in her name.
Yeah,
they just assume it was me.
Right. that's brilliant. As we always ask with our guests, and we mentioned this at the start of the podcast, but with your loss of Billy in 2019, do you want to talk, sir, and if Ryan and Matt have got any questions that they want to bring up, they will do so, just about what happened and how the journey up to and finding out about the loss, unfortunately, of Billy.
Yeah. So Billy was our first pregnancy. I went into it with the typical sort of naive optimism, just sitting and waiting. Once the baby's here, then I'll be doing stuff. Yeah. There's not really much for me to do at this stage. And looking back on it now, there was a lot of things that I took for granted. I don't really remember much of the pregnancy because it wasn't really my thing. Didn't read any books or anything like that. And then one day I was sick. Real bad, had like a real bad flu or something. And I was sitting in the lounge room early in the morning just because I couldn't sleep. And then Dale came downstairs to go to work. And she's like, I'm just going to go past to the hospital just to get a checkup on the way to work. Just want to make sure everything's okay.
Right.
And I was just like, yeah, cool. Like, didn't think anything of it. And then I get a phone call 25 minutes later or something saying, you have to come in. And after that, when I knew after hearing her voice how it sounded, I knew something was wrong and I wasn't sick anymore. I just got up, got in the car, and I was in the hospital within like 15 minutes or so. And I just remember walking in. I had to walk into like the birth center, and they had us in a room next to like the waiting room. And I just walked in. I was like, what's going on? I don't know. Like, you didn't tell me anything. Mm. And she was just laying there in the bed, just in tears, saying that they couldn't find a heartbeat during the initial check. And I was like, oh, okay, have they done an ultrasound or anything? Mm. And they're like, no. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. We'll just wait here. And like, I was still thinking, like, I didn't know what stillbirth was. I didn't know that was a thing that could happen. So yeah. I was just like, all right, they'll fix something. They'll sort it out. Like, we're at the hospital now. And I just remember waiting there. And then they took us down to the ultrasound room. The doctor or the technician did their thing and just said, yeah, like, that's sorry to say, but there's no heartbeat. And I was so confused. I was just like, what do you mean? Like, what is, like, what's happening? I didn't know that this was something that could happen.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, someone explained to me what's going on.
Mm. Were people?
Oh, not really. Like, they did and they didn't. They were more that it was for the first probably couple of hours afterwards, it was just them directing us to places.
Okay.
And telling us to sit here and do this
and
wait here and call. You should probably call your family and stuff. And that's pretty much what we did. And then I went all out because I've got a really big family on my side. Okay. And so I called my mom and I called my dad. And then next thing you know, like my brother and my cousin and stuff are all there. And I'm just like, oh, okay, this is going to be like the waiting room's full of my family just waiting to know what's going on. Mm. So it was just very much a blur. Yeah. And then we went back up. They took us back to the birth center and sat us in a room. And they took us to the very end room. They didn't have a separate room for us to go to, so we were pretty much just sitting in a room listening to babies being born.
How many times do we hear that?
It's crazy, isn't it? It's crazy.
Just happens so much, doesn't it? Like,
I think of the episodes that we've done, I'm sure there's only one or maybe two that times when we've been heard that actually there was a separate area of a hospital, there was a different floor or a different building. But overwhelmingly, and there was the one, I can't remember which one, I think it was in America, but it had a bell, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And during that, and again, as we've said, with the numbness, she sat there, it's just happened. So it's in this stage of going, well, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
And you got all these people being quite formal, I guess, in a way of like, this is what you need to do. And it's just, you're not in a place to take that in. So.
Yeah, it got pretty sort of intense. And then So we're in. They put us in room 11, right down the end, as far away as they could get us. Mm. They put a sticker on the door to let people know, and it was like butterfly wings to let people know that there was a stillbirth in there.
Yeah.
I just remember we were just sitting there for hours, just like waiting to know what's going on. We had a social worker come in, give us a pamphlet, and said, "Reach out if you need anything," and just left. And
thanks.
Yeah. And they did come back after Billy was born, but they looked very much like they were like, if they had said it was their first day, I wouldn't have been surprised. Like, they seemed like they had no idea what they were doing. Mm. So we were just waiting. I remember after they came in and said that they're going to start the process, and I was like, what?
Yeah,
like, I feel like most of the time I was like, was I just not listening in sections, or are they just coming in half explaining things, expecting that we already knew what was going to happen? Because a lot of the time they came in saying, oh, we're going to get, like, do you want epidural or anything like that? And my wife was like, what? Like, I don't know why would I need that? And like, oh, well, because we're going to start the labor process. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, and I was just like, what is happening? Like, someone...
I was going to say, it's like everything's moving at a million miles an hour around you, but you're working in slow motion, isn't it?
Yeah, just sitting there, just like... It's like on the movies when they do like the fast forward of everyone running around and you're staying still.
At this point, Rob, had they confirmed the news to you? They had confirmed the news.
Yes, yes. So they confirmed it when they did the ultrasound, and then the midwife and the doctor came and told us when we went back up to the room, and then pretty much everyone that came into the room since that after that was pretty much just like, yeah, sorry for what happened. The midwives were amazing, and they need sort of more. They need to get paid more. Whatever they're paying them isn't enough.
Yeah, same over here. Yeah.
And I just remember so they came in and Dale didn't want an epidural, didn't want to take any drugs, wanted a natural sort of birth and stuff. And then they came in and they said, like, because of the type of birth that's happening, there's like for you to be in pain, it's not, they don't think it's worth you to do that. And so we decided to do, she was going to do the epidural, and that meant that she was stuck in the bed for however long. And I just remember there was one, like, we were sitting there sort of disassociating from the whole situation.
That's it.
And I just remember, like, sitting on this tiny little chair next to the bed, just knowing that my back was going to be broken after this. And I pulled out my phone and we started watching The Big Bang Theory for some reason. Just trying to, like,
yeah,
just trying to find some sort of normalcy to the whole situation.
Mm.
It was, yeah, just waiting and waiting. And then my mum and my dad and my mother-in-law was there. They said it was going to be a few hours for Billy to come. We didn't know that she was a girl at that stage. It was going to be a surprise the entire time. So we waited until she was born. And just like Murphy's Law, so our parents left. They're like, oh, it's going to be a while. It's going to be a few hours. We'll go home, get some rest, and then we'll come back. And then my mum was on the tram outside the hospital heading home, and like literally 10 minutes later, like Billy was there.
It's always the way, isn't it?
So I called him, like, come back. And so, yeah, that was it. Billy came, and I think the thing that I will always remember the most is just how deafening a silent birth is.
Well, you can relate to that.
I've often said that before, is that when Lily was born, your instinct is to expect, like, to hear a cry, isn't it? Because that's what happens when a baby is born through a natural birth. You think immediately you're going to hear this cry. But it is like a deafening silence, and it's a very, very uncomfortable silence as well.
Is it part of the male thing too? Because we mentioned this, and I think Rob was about to allude to it, unless I'm mistaken, but especially when we've not been through it before, we don't know what to expect, and our only reference point is watching stuff on TV or films or, you know, whatever it is, and you go, right, you go in, at 2 minutes, everything's fine, cry. But then, as you say, why would you know these things? Matt's mentioned this so many times. There's no, that naivety, which is then gone and has an impact on the following pregnancies that you went through with Logan and with Addison, isn't it? So that's not there.
I think it just completely sums up the subject in the sense of how life-changing and how quickly your life... We've said it so many times. It's just like this is just the example of life flipping upside down in the space of such a short period of time. You know, it really is.
What I want to ask Rob is that you've alluded to the fact that sort of throughout the pregnancy you weren't maybe overly engaged in it, where maybe others are or something like that, in the respect of that. When Dale said she was going to stop and go for a checkup on the way, and it was almost like a yep, okay, sort of, you know. We've spoken to lots of people who have obviously differing experiences, some that are fully engaged within the pregnancy and some that aren't. What sort of person are you? Is that you because that is you as a person, or was it just the fact that the naivety of pregnancy, you just fully expected everything to run its course in the natural way that it's supposed to?
Yeah, I think before Billy, I was very much going with the flow with things, just cruising along, just letting things happen, saying like, this, it'll happen the way it happens. You know, there's nothing we can do about it. And so I was just more like, I'll be there when you need me. Like, I was definitely, I was involved. I was going to appointments and things like that. I wasn't going to all of them, but I wasn't involved in such as knowing exactly how many weeks, how big she would be.
Yeah.
Tracking sort of like how Dale's sort of hormone levels and things like that would be changing and things like that. But in hindsight, compared to how I was with Logan and Addison, I was, in comparison, I was barely involved when it came to Billy, like, because I was very much involved and advocating for both of them after Billy.
Was that a conscious change, or do you think that was, is that just something that came from what happened, or was it a decision where it's like, okay, on this one now, when you found out and you made the decision that you're going to go and try again, just looking at from how to best, whether it's like a mental preparation to shield yourself or using what you've learned, how long did it take for that decision to make that, okay, we're going to do this again?
The majority of people that have a stillbirth, I think stats show that after maybe 4 months, 5 months, they're trying again. Some people have a baby, like are pregnant only a couple months later. Mm. We discussed it and we were worried that we were sort of dishonoring Billy in a way by trying again so quickly, trying to replace her, which we didn't want to do. We also were terrified of it happening again, because the only experience we've had with pregnancy was a traumatic one. My whole perspective of life sort of changed. I realized that you can't just let things happen and just go with the breeze. If you want something to happen a certain way, or if you have a goal that you want to get to, you need to start doing things about it. You need to start putting plans in place and because after Billy died, there was a lot of like, oh, you know, it was just God's way or was meant to be and things like that. And I was like, no, like shit just happens.
Right.
And
okay.
Yeah. You need to deal with it. I no longer sort of have that belief that there's a reason for everything. It's just chaos in the mix of everything that you need to sort of go through.
So it wasn't like subscribing to, like, I'm a firm believer in fate, or maybe some people's spirituality, some people obviously were religion, and some people like just go, like, I think the word you summed it up there is chaos, because that is, I mean, look at the world in general, isn't it?
So how did you deal?
I think I didn't really have any sort of belief or sort of goals or anything before Billy. Like, I was just working a job.
Yeah.
I just started a new job recently when I was with Billy, and yeah, just going through the motions every day. And so
Did you have time off?
I did. I had about a month off. It was interesting because work was really good. I'd only been there probably 5-6 months, and it was a completely different direction in career as well for me. So starting at the bottom. So I was working. So before that, I spent 12 years working in property maintenance for hotels.
Okay.
So like, name a hotel brand, and I probably worked for
Ramada. I thought it was a game.
Yeah. Hilton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Hilton was the first hotel chain I worked for.
Travelodge.
Travelodge. I've worked for Travelodge.
You got them? Is that Lenny's one? Is that Lenny? Is Travelodge
Lenny Henry? Right?
No, it's Premier Inn, isn't it?
Oh, is it Premier? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I was doing that, and I sort of saw the career trajectory I was heading in, and I knew that I didn't want to go that way.
Okay.
So I was like, I need to make a change. And I started working in, I liked travel. I liked doing adventures and stuff. So I started working, I got a job in a travel company, where they do expeditions for kids, send them overseas and stuff.
Oh, great.
And I was working in customer service, helping kids and their parents sort of fundraise for these trips and get them prepped. And yeah. And so Dale was pregnant when I got that job. Then, like, yeah, like 5 months later, I was telling him, like, oh, I'm not coming into work.
Yeah.
And they were really good. They were understanding. It was a small team, so I was grateful that they sort of took on the workload for me while I was away. And then I went in, and we had like a return to work plan where, because I went back to them and had a meeting and was like, listen, I don't think I can have conversations with parents, listening to them. Mainly my concern was listening to them complain about their kids, or like their kids not saving enough money and stuff, because I was worried that I was going to not have a breakdown. I was worried I was going to snap at them.
Ryan, Ryan was a teacher. Same thing, wasn't it, with the kids?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I was teaching. I was actually my newly over here. I don't know what they call it over in Australia, but I was in my newly qualified teacher year, so I'd only actually been in the school that I was at for 6 months, and yeah, I was very much the same. When it was parents' evenings, or if you had kids in lessons that were pissing around, and I had no time for the kids who had an opportunity in life, but there were obviously so many other kids around the world that are stillborn or die neonatally, or, you know, are suffering in famine or whatever that is, who don't get an opportunity, and I had no time for...
It's completely understandable, isn't it? That's what it's because, yeah. It's,
and even now, I'm still...
It's like when you got bruised, you're thumbing it.
It's
the pain, you know it's there, and you're going back.
I think even now, I still get angry when I see parents in a shop or something and they don't give a shit about their kids and stuff. Still get angry when I see things like that. Yeah,
it's completely understandable.
Because they don't realise how lucky they are.
Yeah.
You know, when you think of the amount of people we deal with through the charity who have either lost their first child or gone on and lost a subsequent child after having a previous child or what have you, and them not being able to live their life as they saw it at one point before it was taken away from them, is obviously horrible, heartbreaking.
And because Matt's mentioned it plenty of times, you start wrecking your brain, wouldn't it? What did I do, and what did I do to deserve this? It's not fair, isn't it? Like, why is this? It's going to just play havoc. What I will say on a disclaimer, Ryan's quite angry in general, so this good thing with the school kids, because they'll just it'd be drop kicking them over the fence, wouldn't it? Like, yeah.
Oh, there was a fucking few that I could have as well. Yeah. But actually, going back to what Rob said as well, on the not believing in... Tell me if I'm misquoting, Rob, where you said about the karma and the sort of, you know, the things like that, and not believing that it was caused because of that. I was very much like, because I think part of your grieving process is bargaining anyway. And
with yourself, like
bargaining with yourself, and also asking yourself the questions.
Yeah.
You know, what did I do to deserve this?
Why,
you know, is it because I nicked that packet of Chew-Its when I was 12 years old from the shop? Is it because of, and you do, you bargain and you look at past decisions and you think, is that the reason?
Yeah.
And eventually I very much... I'll never ever forget this one lady who said to me, you know, God does things to test you. And this lady must have been in her 70s when she said it, and I think I took her back, so I think I turned around and said, well, yeah, God's a prick, because why would you do something like that?
I said
it obviously in anger at the time. Yeah. I don't have an issue with people that have faith and what have you, but...
I totally get you.
It was like, you know, it doesn't work that way. Yeah.
But the thing is, I am religious, and I think she's a prick for saying that.
Because, I didn't call her a prick.
No, but I
wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, but no. But I know what I'm saying is,
I know what you mean.
It annoys me because... Yeah.
She was trying to say something
point is like, it's... Like I said, it's this God's plan thing. And it really tested my faith when we lost Callie. You know, I was pushed to limits. I was, you know, Crystal was just possibly coming round to whatever it might be. Then she just went, see ya, and that's fine. But and as a religious man, I still struggle with when people say that to me, you know? So, Rob, I was going to ask, how did you deal with the initial kind of early stages of losing Billy? Because, like, you know, I'm interested to see, like, or hear about your kind of reaction to it, your early stages of it, and then really moving from there towards another pregnancy and things like that. But yeah, because males do struggle sometimes with the early stages because they feel they have to take on a certain role. So I'm just interested to see where you stood with that, I suppose.
This is probably the same. This is something that I know that a lot of your guests have said, is it pretty much initially after Billy was born, my role was I needed to do things. I needed to get things done. I had things to do. I needed to look after Dale, make sure she was okay. I needed to organize the family, making sure like when people aren't coming in all at once. We needed to start organizing the funeral and stuff. So there was tasks that needed to be completed, and that kept me sort of, I was okay. And then, if you had to see me on the street, during the period from being in the hospital to just after the funeral, it was pretty much just like, I'm doing this. I got that to do. I got this to do. I got that to do. Even at the funeral, like I was being a host. So like at the actual, funeral, I was a mess, but then we had the wake, and at the wake, if someone had to come into the wake and you had to said, pick the dad, they wouldn't have picked me. I was chatting and giving people drinks, like being friendly and making jokes with friends that I hadn't seen in a while. But I could tell from their own demeanor is that they knew my friends knew me well enough to know that I wasn't doing okay. Mm. But then once the funeral was over and we went home, and there was nothing else to do, I pretty much just stayed at home. I remember speaking to my dad, because my dad's a psychologist, so I was asking him for some advice on. I was worried about my anger. I wasn't really. I call it rage more than anything, because I wasn't outwardly sort of angry or anything. I knew that if something was to happen, like if I went out to the shops and someone did something that I found annoying, I was worried that I was going to snap and start screaming and stuff. That never happened, thankfully. But I remember speaking to him saying, like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to control, or like, I'm worried that I'm not going to be able to control it. Kind of like the Hulk in a way.
Because it's bottled up, isn't it? And it's going to...
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of like the Hulk.
I was like trying to deal with emotions that I'd never experienced before.
Yeah. It's like a jack in the box.
And my wife...
And
it was... And like trying... In contrasting that with trying to... I didn't know this at the time, but like because me and Dale were grieving differently. So all of my grief and stuff was happening internally. And she was very much, you could tell, like she was depressed and distraught. And at the funeral, she didn't speak to anyone. Like she was just a zombie basically, which is completely understandable. And she was doing the healthy thing. She was sitting with her emotions and allowing them to be with her. I was doing the opposite and not doing any of that. I was like, I don't feel like I'm just going to push everything down and just be my normal self to everyone. Nobody's going to know that I'm not doing okay. And that was my sort of, I thought that was the best way to get better. It's like, I was like going through the stages of grief and I was going to go through them. Like I'm going to do depression, anger, bargaining, or I'm going to get through them like levels. And then once I'm done to acceptance, I'm completed and it's all sorted and I'll be fine.
So you're looking at, sorry to point in, but in a way, this sums up every reason that this podcast kind of exists, because there's stereotypes, and whether stereotypes, there's a whole other debate there, but quite often they become stereotypes because there might be elements of truth in them. But one of the reasons is the guys internalize things. The girls will be more overtly, is that the right word? Emotional with it. And exactly the things that you're saying then, it's like, you've got a plan. I'm going to be logical with it. I'm going to do this. Stage one, bang. Stage two, bang. Then I'll get to the end. Got the big boss level win. I'm out of there.
It's like hurdles race. Rob, is that where... the sort of idea for the, I know why you did your challenge, and we're going to speak about that. Is that why you chose to do that challenge? Because it was your way of being able to almost steer your emotion and feeling to be able to have a
release.
A release.
I think this whole, like the whole, everything that I'm doing now, so with the challenge and with little social enterprise that we've started, is to, because my whole thing was I needed to fix what happened. I needed to fix it, but there's nothing I can do to fix it. And the more and more I think about it, I think the more of these things that I'm doing is my own way of fixing it and making sure that there's a legacy for Billy, so what happened wasn't in vain. And so that's why, yeah, the challenge was more about sort of raising awareness of stillbirth, mainly because afterwards I didn't have anyone to talk to about it I didn't have any resources. My wife and I went to counseling that was recommended to us, but that didn't really work.
Was it couples, or were you going separately, or was it couples? The reason I'm asking, we've spoke about this before on the show. Listen to Ian Lawton's episode. We'll send you the link afterwards, actually, because he had a fascinating take on that.
Yeah, so we did couples therapy a few months after Billy, and we didn't find that helpful, because we would go in and we were both sort of going in stress because we had to leave work early and we were already feeling bad. Mm. Dal wasn't working, but I had to leave work early. She had to drive into the city. Mm. And driving into the city is a nightmare. Have you heard of a hook turn? Like, hook turns are a nightmare.
Hook turn? Is that a U-turn?
A U-turn.
I thought that was that woman from America.
Hey. Hook turn.
Yeah. Sorry, I
want
that.
Yeah.
No, so a hook turn. So because of the trams in Melbourne, if you need to turn right in the city, if there's a tram line there, you have to go to the left lane and then drive in front of the oncoming traffic that's going to be coming towards you. And when their lights turn green, you turn right into the street with the rest of the cars.
I'm going to be watching hook turn videos on YouTube when I get home.
Not hook turn.
Yeah, so driving into the city is a bit stressful sometimes, and I had to leave work early, and I was already sort of...
Yes, yeah, so you need to be in that right mindset, don't you, to do it? Yeah, you need to be in that right mindset, and you're not, yeah.
So we're getting there, we're a bit flustered, and we don't really know what to do, and then we go in there and we sit down, and the counsellor's there and just says...
Go.
Yeah, and we're like, she's not giving us any sort of prompts or asking us questions or anything like that. We just sort of have to spew out how we're feeling. And because we don't know, because we've never had these emotions before in this weight, we don't know how to sort of express them.
That's it.
We haven't been shown. Mm. And so we went to probably 4 or 5 sessions and we just said, we're not going back.
You need someone to kind of hold your hand to help you at the start, because at that start of that process, whether there was that particular counsellor, maybe they were just shit.
But that's what we've always said about the one-to-one service that we offer as a charity, is that when you lose a baby, you don't need to see a counsellor. Mm. You don't need to, because like Rob said there, a counsellor is basically a glorified name for listening. And it's usually person-led, i.e. by the person who is going to seek that support. The difference with the support that we offer is they're talking to somebody who has walked their path.
Lived experience.
And lived experience. So therefore, to go back to what Rob was saying there, where he said they don't know how to express their feeling or what the norm is, or what's normal and what's not normal and what have you, is that we can validate what is,
straight away you have a credibility,
because there's a credibility because of knowing exactly what that person is feeling.
So true.
Yeah. Mm.
I want to move on to the challenge now, because there's two. The main one that is nuts, and there's another one that you mentioned recently when you went to a island for a friend's wedding or something, which I also thought was a bit bonkers. But you did this challenge from the 1st of January 2024 until the 31st of December 2024. And also last year was a leap year, as Rob discovered after he embarked on the challenge. He did something absolutely phenomenal, which he is about to tell you now.
Yeah, so last year, I'm pretty sure it was December 31st, 2023. I was like, I should do something next year.
So the day before the year started.
I do like you.
Because the 2023, I ran my first marathon for the Stillbirth Foundation in Australia.
Okay.
That's when I discovered that I hated running quite a bit. And so, but I ran the marathon. It was terrible. I was beaten by like an 81-year-old man. I was so slow.
But you made it. You got around.
I did it. I got there. And through that journey, I was posting on social media and I was raising money for the Stillbirth Foundation down here. And that opened up a whole lot of, there's like an online community that I found. People reached out to me and stuff. And I realized that there was more that I could be doing because there's so many people that don't have an outlet or they don't have, they've tried to have a conversation about their loss to people before. And it's either made the sort of interaction uncomfortable or they get shut down. And so they don't talk about it. Creating a pathway for them to have those conversations was sort of the goal. Okay. And so after doing the marathon, I just remember sitting, the marathon was in October. So by December, I was like, oh yeah, I could do another one.
And
December 31st, I'm like, nah, I should do something else that's different.
Yeah.
And I was like, why don't I just run 6Ks every day to honor and represent the six babies that we lose in Australia every day? And I remember on January 1st, I was like, I'm going from a run. And I told my wife, like, I'm going to do this every day. And she's like, okay.
did she believe you? Did she think you'd
she,
do it?
Yeah, she knows me well enough now that like if I get something.
Get the bit between
if
your
I
teeth.
Get an idea, if I get an idea in my head, I can't focus on anything else until it's done sort of thing. So I'd be more annoying to her if I didn't do it.
I mean, I just love the fact that you decided that you were going to do it the day before you started doing it.
Yeah, I love it.
Absolutely. Yeah, love so to clarify, 6 kilometers every day for the whole year, and you were doing that because in Australia the stats show that it's 6 stillbirths per day.
Yeah. If it was in the UK, I think I saw that it was 8 a day.
Yeah.
And then if it was in America, I'd have to run 60 kilometers a day.
Wow. But when you look, population per
population,
that's
or miles, because I'd have to run miles to make them understand.
Yeah, wow. We'll jump to the end quickly before I come back into this. But just for anyone who's thinking, you completed the challenge. You did 6 kilometers every single day for a year. I mean, that's a round of applause.
Yeah,
that is. That's insane.
It's 366 days.
And
what's
fucking
that, miles?
Nuts.
Yeah, it's insane and fucking just, nuts. What is it, miles? For, what?
It's just over 4 mile, right?
So what's that work out to over the year?
I think
we've done the maths.
We did it, didn't we? Because in kilometres...
I think we don't. We're just
2,190 kilometres and divide...
Yeah, it's about a marathon a week.
And it was a leap year, so you've got to put an extra 6 in there.
So it's 26 miles a week.
Yeah.
Works out about 1,460 miles.
Wow. That's like 3. Is it about out of what's John O'Groats to Land's End in England? It's about 500 miles.
So no, it's about 800.
Is it that much?
Yeah. It's not doing that twice.
It's nuts. That's insane. At which point did you go, this was a bad idea?
January 1st.
I can imagine it was
the summer as well. So I was like, I hate the heat. That's why I'm like, I'm glad I live in Melbourne because it doesn't get as hot as like Queensland, like Brisbane.
Yeah, what's it get
north
to? Only about 40 degrees, isn't it? I mean, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, so like a really hot day would probably get to like between like 38, 40
it's
degrees.
Not that hot.
They're the days that I try and get an early one in before it gets too hot.
Would you do the same routes? How did you plan it? Did you do it with people? Was it on your own?
It was mainly just on my own, trying to juggle work and 2 kids and just the general sort of life, trying to fit in an hour to get it done a day was the hardest part.
Well, that's the discipline there, isn't it?
Yeah, I just had to get it done. So during the summer, hot days, I just try and go in the mornings.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to get it done until it's nighttime. But yeah, it was a challenge. I hate running. Hates
it's,
me.
It's
so
phenomenal, mate. The continual repetition of doing that every single day, wear and tear. So, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I
love the fact you're thinking about it.
36. I stopped counting after 30.
Okay, right. So you know you're still, you know, relatively young, but they're not every single day. I know it's like 4 miles, 6 kilometers, but still every day. That's you're going to get aches and pains from it. But I think the positives are, how mentally did you feel from the start to the finish, and also much fitter, like aerobically, or because it's only going to have positive impact. Only going to have a positive impact. Maybe not in your shoes, but everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in terms of fitness, I definitely feel fitter. I feel better. Like, this is probably...
You're going, that 81-year-old's not going to pass me this year at the marathon, little bastard.
This is probably the healthiest I've been ever. Like, I didn't play sports or anything growing up. Like, I tried out for a lot of things and never made it.
Yeah.
I wasn't very athletic. Running was never something that I ever did. Like, whenever we did running at school or long distance stuff, you'd find me and my mates, we'd run up to the football oval and then start crack open a pack of cigarettes and start smoking. there was no running happening. So I didn't really start doing sort of these sort of things until 2014 was my first sort of big endurance adventure.
Yeah.
I sold my apartment, quit my job, and I went to Japan for 3 months and walked 1,500 kilometers down Japan.
So you go all in, don't you? Like, literally, it is like, it's one of them. Like, you go from
balls to
you go from like 0 to 100 miles an hour. Like,
also,
you know,
he went
literally.
Yeah, it's all or nothing.
I bet you didn't decide you were going to Japan until about 3 hours before you got on the flight.
Well, funny enough, I wasn't meant to go to Japan. I was going to China, but China wouldn't let me do it. They wouldn't let me go there for that long. I ended up having to change to China because I wouldn't get my visa.
I do love it. I love meeting people like this who literally just go from nothing to everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you're pretty all much doing, I know, but you're doing this. You are. You're going from like, you're doing the challenge you're going to do is like, you've already said about the press ups, 12 to 150 in a day. Like, you know, it's all or nothing, isn't it? It is. Once you're you're in, aren't you? You know?
Yeah.
I can do more than 12 in a day now. Yeah, I get that. But what I'm saying is, like,
that's
not
half a push up every hour.
No, but what I mean is, like, you're doing something every day.
Do
you know what I mean? I mean, I do actually think that, like, bereaved parents are a bit special in the head. So when they do this kind of stuff, like, it's almost like
but ultimately, if you look at it,
it's the pain as well, isn't it? But you said it doesn't compare to what you've
doesn't
gone
compare
through,
to what
it,
you've
like,
been
you know?
Through, does it? No,
and that's
exactly.
the point, you know.
Exactly.
And I imagine that as tough robbers as this will have been at certain points, and I certainly do this all the time with my running. You reach back and think, I can do this. It's fine.
Well, your challenges are pretty insane as well. Like, the one that Matt did before his leg fell off last year was, he did like, he ran 4 miles every 4 hours for 48 hours. So, and no matter what, so even if it was like 4 a.m, get up 4 miles, next one has to be at 8 a.m. If I'd have done that, I wouldn't have been able to finish the first one before the next one bloody started.
I remember going on the one at midnight with him as well.
Yeah, he was,
in the middle of the area where we ran into. I've never ran so fucking fast in my life.
We ran past a couple of people at a bus stop, and Ryan was like, head down.
But they're not going to rob you though, are they? What are they going to do? Give us your lycra.
They weren't going to rob me, mate. I was like Scrappy Doo, legging it as fast as I could.
Yeah, it's like on the canal. That's my thing on the canal. Scrappy if anyone approaches me on the canal, I'm like, right, I'll tell you what, if you want my phone, I'll run you for it. If you can keep up with me for 2 miles, that's fine.
I'll race you for it.
Yeah,
right.
Like, if you can run with me for 2 miles non-stop, you can have my phone. That's fine. But like,
then he's off.
But yeah,
I'll just kick him in the canal.
Yeah, but I mean, Rob, I think it's wonderful. Genuinely,
that's,
I do.
Like,
I. But as I said, I do think once you go through something that you faced like that, the pain that you may feel, it's nothing. It isn't, and it's all in the. It's into your mind, and once you get past that moment,
yeah. Do you miss it in a weird kind of way? Because, like, you don't like running, but you've done it every day. It's become part of your daily routine.
He's shaking his head. I don't think
you
do.
No. But do you?
On January 1st, I felt a bit odd. Because it was in the back of my mind, I felt like there was something I forgot to do all day.
Okay.
Yeah. I was like, there's something I was supposed to be doing today. And I was like, oh no, I don't have to do that now. But then I was also that last run, I was this
I bet you were like Forrest Gump, weren't you, on that last one?
Yeah, well, the last run was interesting because my son, so my son got croup.
Oh, wow.
So I was running, I sounded like I had a 40 a day smoker on the final day. And it was a struggle. That it was probably I wanted to finish off strong.
Yeah.
Do like a quick 6Ks, but no.
Yeah, because I was going to say,
you kind of gone through the whole year not being sick.
I was going to say, I'm assuming you obviously got sick at some point, but you just got up and did it, right? Like, you know?
It was
mentally, that's so good for you.
Oh, yeah.
It was funny that, like, you mentioned it. So I think if I had decided to do this challenge and I hadn't have lost Billy, I wouldn't have stuck with it. Right. I wouldn't have done it. There would have been days where I'm like, nah, I'm just not going to do it today.
There was no way you could stop, was it? Yeah.
Right.
It was that commitment and then the discipline to get up and do it every day, even on because our daughter was born last year as well. And so during that whole period was hard to do as well. So I got to run in and then we had to go to the hospital like half an hour after I finished my run.
Had you showered?
And then... I think I did. And then we're in the hospital. So that was Addison was born at 36 weeks because she had some growth restriction issues.
Right.
It wouldn't have been picked up if we hadn't have advocated to be seen as high risk, because they were just going to put us in general population at that stage, because we had a successful pregnancy.
Yeah.
50% of our pregnancies were successful. So that means that we're general population again.
Right.
I don't know how that works. So we pushed back on that pretty hard. And then they've just set up a pregnancy after loss clinic at the hospital in Melbourne that we go to, the Royal Melbourne in the city. If they hadn't have put us in there, if they hadn't have given us a spot, they wouldn't have picked up that she had growth restrictions issues when they did. And then towards the end, they were saying that this is sort of mirroring Billy's pregnancy, they didn't pick up any of that with Billy because she wasn't high risk. So they didn't do all the extra scans and the checkups. Mm. And so when we got to 36 weeks, we're like, yep, she's coming now. And then we went into the hospital. Then I think it was 2 in the morning. So we went in at 8 a.m. and then 2 in the morning the next day, we had to go in for emergency C-section because she was her heart rate was dropping so much.
Oh, God, that must have been horrible.
Yeah, that was intense. And then then she was born. They had to perform CPR on her and stuff. And then they brought her out, took her to a room, and then I had to leave because there wasn't anywhere for me to stay. So I had to go home. Oh, went home, had a nap, did my run, went back into the hospital.
Oh yeah, of course.
See, there you go.
Rob, you're amazing.
Yeah.
Christmas Day, what time did you do your run? Was it before the presents? Definitely weren't after lunch, was it?
It was before. Yeah, before I ate anything.
Otherwise,
I would have been vomiting.
Imagine that.
Down the street.
I know people would have drove past you and going, he's that nut. You probably, without realising, have inspired someone's fitness journey because they've gone, I don't know, maybe to the shop to get more alcohol for the granny, and they'd seen you jogging the streets, you're going, well, fucking, I only feel like I need to fix up my game. This geezer's out doing a run on Christmas Day.
So
I think we need to get you back on another episode because we're going to wrap up for this episode now. But just finally on the challenge, because I did allude to this, you came over, was it you had a friend's wedding or something in Ireland and you did?
I had a mate of mine he had a wedding in Ireland.
So you did a crazy challenge then?
So I rode, I've got a... just a normal push scooter, so like a Razor scooter, but a bit bigger.
Right.
And I took that with me, and then I had like a 20 kilo pack and just rode from Malinhead to Mizenhead, which is the northernmost point of Ireland, to the bottom southernmost point of Ireland.
All of Ireland.
So I did that.
On a scooter.
And then I think I got down to Cork. And when I got to Cork, I had to catch a bus to Dublin for the wedding and then do the wedding. But nobody told me that Irish weddings go for days. It was like 7 in the morning the next day. Everyone's still getting after it. And I was like, I've got to go back and catch the bus back to Cork right now and keep riding the scooter. And so that was a very tough bus ride.
But you did it. You did it again. You did it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that was it there. That was an interesting one because I didn't, when I got to the southernmost point, I thought there'd be like a tourist section and like stuff. There's nothing there. And I had to get.
There's not even a gift shop.
It's like you said. You say it's like Father. It's like Father Ted.
Craggy Island. Yeah.
Where's that bloke who sat on the fence who just told everyone to go somewhere? Like, ask him.
There was no one. There was no nothing there, and I had to go. So I rode from where I was staying, and then it was like 20 k's.
Yeah.
I was like 20 k's for the last day to the bottom, and I was like, "All right, I'm done. I'll get a cab back to where I'm staying."
Yeah.
No cabs. The town's too small. There's like, there's one guy that will drive you, but he's at the pub. So.
Mate, Island's
so I just great. went to the pub. I went to the pub for a bit, and then I just had to ride 20 k's back to the house.
You might have scooted past this guest. I told you the episode to go. It's actually for Ian Lawton, the guy with the counselling. So he ended up doing and the male one really worked for him. And he also does a lot of running. He did a book called Running for Hank. He's at Ireland and he's gone through. I kept thinking of you a lot during your episode tonight. And you probably weren't quite close to where he is. It's one of the early episodes when we're still on Zoom. But that's one I think you'll be... you'll be good. And also, I think Ian would enjoy listening to you. You're brilliant to listen to and to talk to. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, you can get me on socials, Rob_Saunders on Instagram and TikTok. It's two Bs because there was no other names available. You can also look at room11.com.au is the website. We've got a newsletter and stuff. We make still Billy boxes that we give to hospitals. We're trying to raise brilliant. Funds so we can give them to hospitals for free, so they can give them to families. It's got resources, booklets, candles, and teddy bears and stuff like that in there, just to give people a little resource pack.
Okay.
So that's the purpose of that website. Mm. And yeah.
Amazing.
And for anyone listening to this episode, obviously in Australia, anywhere near Rob. It'll be because we're getting a little community of Australian guests that we've had on before. So if you'd like to join us at any point, you can get in touch with us through our socials. All the details for that are in the description for this. We've also got our app, which has had a little facelift not so long back. So if you haven't downloaded that yet, Rob, thank you so much.
Yeah, Rob, we'll get you back on. We will. Honestly, yeah, we'll get you back
cool.
on.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It's been really great.
And that brings this episode of the Still Parents podcast to a close, supported by Globals. Make some noise. We will be back very, very soon. Until then, take care, everybody. And we'll see you next time.
Adios.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Globals Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.